So you need a team that will really deep dive into these intrinsic motivations, feelings, anxieties, etc., and will understand how to build the right product, which will set the right expectations, reduce this anxiety, and will really help them, and help them in a way that they will be comfortable taking advantage of.
Welcome to the SMB Tech Innovators Podcast, powered by Gusto. On this show, we explore the intersection of fintech, vertical SaaS, and how software combats the rising complexity of running a business. Our goal is to share stories, advice, and best practices from the leaders and investors behind today's cutting-edge platforms. This episode of the SMB Tech Innovators Podcast is brought to you by Gusto Embedded. Gusto has spent a decade building and testing its payroll, tax filing, and compliance infrastructure, which is available as a robust set of APIs so you can develop custom-tailored payroll solutions. For more information, go to embedded.gusto.com. Here's your host, Brian Bush.
On this episode of the SMB Tech Innovators Podcast, my guest is Yuval Keston, the Chief Product Officer of Honeybook, the all-in-one client flow management platform for independent service-based businesses. Yuval, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
I'm thrilled to jump into this one. Let's quickly anchor the audience just a little bit. Besides Honeybook, you spent quite a bit of time at Meta. I'm curious, give us just the basics of your background and career path. And importantly, were there any lessons learned along the way that you feel like have particularly influenced how you think about the chief product officer role?
Yeah. So at Meta, I started as a software engineer and then climbed through the ladder to being director, worked on search and kind of like news-focused products, worked on emerging markets for quite a while, and then worked on e-commerce. Fascinating, very diverse. It was an amazing experience. I guess one of the main things that I learned at Meta, because it's so extreme there, is bottom-up culture. Mm. And they take this to the far end. And I got to experience different types of product-led cultures, but all of them were very bottom-up. And it's quite unique. I would say that now at Honeybook, which is quite a different company, I still am a strong advocate of bottom-up. Read all the Marty Kagan books, and to some extent, it's like an old-time Facebooker. Nothing over there sounded too new. It was very familiar. But I feel that what I learned by switching teams at Meta and then by joining a new company with quite a different culture, you learn to adapt what bottom-ups mean for this specific period of time, for the challenges you're facing, and for the specific teams and individuals you're working with. So it's a kind of like a topic I really care about.
Interesting. I'm excited to maybe circle back to that just a little more towards the end. And for the audience, we'll absolutely link to the resources that have already been mentioned, as well as more throughout the show in the show notes. Yuval, how do you describe Honeybook and what you think sets the platform apart from its competition?
Interesting. So first of all, Honeybook is a client flow platform. And what client flow is, you may ask. And client flow is basically the process of selling and delivering your personalized services. So our audience are independents, people who build their own business, whether they do have a small team or not, or they're just them. Doesn't matter, we serve both. But those independents, we focus on the folks that are in the service-based basis, businesses. So historically, Honeybook started from the events industry. Think about DJs, florists, event planners, caterers, photographers. And we still care a lot about them. A large part of our community is coming from those kind of like verticals. But over the years, we also extended to other types of service-based businesses. Basically, what we try to do is to help them with all the work that is kind of like not their passion and purpose. So Honeybook's vision is a life built on passion and purpose. So we believe that a photographer or a brand designer, they're not as passionate about going over their open invoices list and see who paid them and who didn't and reminding them. That's definitely one thing that we want to do. But even connecting to their potential clients is something that once the interaction is there, like in a meeting, they're great. They are energized by it. It's amazing. But all the mundane work that is required to emails and setup and scheduling and rescheduling and all, that's definitely something that they need help with. That's kind of like in a nutshell what Honeybook is. So we try to help them with all the different steps of the client flow, as we call it. And if you want to use more, I don't know, industry known terms. It's probably a combination of a CRM that is obviously tailored for these folks with a set of online client experiences that they can build through our platform. It can be a contract, a digital contract, obviously, an invoice, a questionnaire for onboarding a new client, a brochure to showcase my services. And those online client experiences are intertwined with the CRM. And to your question, I think that's what set us apart from many of the competitors, because in our domain, you know, your competitors can be huge point solutions like DocuSign or I don't know, QuickBooks invoices, and they can be, you know, more horizontal platforms like us. And where we try to set ourselves apart is with the remarkable client experience that we allow our members, our customers to create, and the kind of like interconnectivity that tries to streamline the entire process.
Yeah. I must say, Yuval, I love that phrase of we want to serve all of the business needs that our clients are not passionate about. That to me is, I feel like, just a wonderful way to encapsulate, because we hear this idea of passion so much when it comes to small businesses. Folks got into launch their small business to do X, Y, or Z. That was their passion. So much of software is about building things to solve the pains that are not their passion. So I'm curious, because you mentioned community, and I certainly see as I look at this space, there's a range of folks, from folks who have, say, their side gigs that are their passion, to folks who have decided, as you said, to make it, it's their independent business, they're going full time to this, to folks who are scaling and growing a business, maybe opening multiple locations. So I think putting your product hat on, if not the journey, that's the spectrum of community that you could be solving. Where in that spectrum do you feel like you're trying to focus your product work? And how do you think about prioritization along that line?
Yeah, it's a good question. So Honeybook was founded about 10 years ago. I joined the company only 2 years ago, so I'm quite new. It took us some time, but relatively quickly, we at least understood which audience we're not focusing on. And those are the folks that, regardless of like their annual revenue as a business or about their level of expertise in their craft, if they're not committed to this specific business, to this specific service-based business, they're probably, they might get some value from us, and obviously we would love to have them on board, but they are not our focus. Because what we see again and again, it's also quite intuitive, and that's like the tragedy of independence. So my sister, she's an architect, she's an independent, running her own firm alone. Sometimes she hires contractors, but basically just her. She's also a mom to three kids, married to her husband, is like full-time worker as well. And the tragedy of being independent, I can see it very closely with my sister, is that as her business grows in terms of clients and revenue, and as she's becoming more and more successful, she's also becoming more and more overwhelmed. And her business life gets, and obviously it affects her personal life, gets more and more miserable unless she's starting to leverage some platforms and tools to handle this chaos. Because she was never a business manager. She's an architect. She's really passionate about it. So that's why we are definitely focused on the folks that are now committed, and whether they are just grinding in the beginning and they're, let's say, in their first year, or they're already are established and they hire their first team members. And some of them might even, it depends on the company type, might even started like a franchise model. We actually see that very successfully with some of our more tenured customers that have grown throughout the years and started to create a bunch of branches in the US for the services they are providing.
Can we double click there for just a sec? I'm curious. You mentioned that, hey, you have some features and functionality that may be great for somebody for whom their passion business takes up, you know, a portion of their time, but the switch flips, or at least in terms of focus, a lot of the value of the platform comes when folks get overwhelmed by the other parts of running the business, the not what they're not passionate about. Do you see that actually show up in the product? Are there signals that kind of indicate to folks that, like, hey, we know that this is a person who is now tipping into, they are overwhelmed by enough of the business that whether they're going to step up a tier or use more functionality, we know that this is now a really great ideal customer for Honeybook.
Definitely. First of all, we try to segment very early in the user journey, even before they become subscribers, just in their first, we have a 7 days free trial, and we try as fast as possible. Sometimes it even takes us a couple of hours to try and estimate, and it's not accurate, but still try to estimate whether this new person that is taking their first steps on the platform is likely to be what we call a committed business. Now, there are many inputs that we use. So we have, you know, we have our own small but mighty data science team, and that was like their original charter. Now they do a bunch of other things, also Gen AI, we might talk about it. But like originally, we created this team for this segmentation task. And how quickly can you, with high certainty, understand whether this trialer is a committed business and someone that can really benefit from the platform? And just to be very concrete, like there are many use cases for that, obviously. But one use case is, you know, to send conversion tracking back to the source, whether it's like Google or Meta or whatever, to them, hey, you know, if this is a person that came from an ad, this is the right type of people. And I'm sure many people that work closely with growth and marketing know that the fastest you can deliver a high confidence signal, the better their algorithms will work for your loops. That's one use case. But let's just think about A/B tests. So we introduce a new feature. We think about the committed businesses. When we design our features, our hypothesis, we think about those folks. But now when we run an A/B test, we need to assess how the A/B test impacted those folks and not the overall population. And so there are many such use cases for this segmentation. Over the years, we learned that a really coarse yet valuable proxy metric for are you committed business or not, and obviously it's all approximations, nothing like 100% accurate, is our own guesstimate of your annual revenue as a business. And what we learned that somewhere along the 20K a year line, so if your annual revenue as a business is above 20K, you are very likely to be a committed business. Obviously, there are outliers. There are like photographers that's just really good and they are in the right zip code. And they do two events a year and they will cross that bar. But overall, for the broader population, it works well. And by the way, fun fact, we don't change the experience. You never get a different experience based on this segmentation. It's only for our own internal tracking and, like I said, conversion signaling and all those kind of things.
Okay. Yuval, thank you for a little more detail there. So to pop us back up, we're going to put a pin in the AI piece, but definitely come back to that. First, though, I'm particularly curious how you view sort of embedded fintech or embedded finance features and functionality. You already mentioned invoicing, you already mentioned payments. Maybe the question is, how do you think about sequencing? Is there more product work planned there? And how do you think about, like, what's your decision framework for when is it the right time to build, whether it's a credit product or a spend management product or some of these other options? What's the trigger that to you says now is the time to add on X, Y, or Z?
Yeah, great question. So it's funny because we have been doing payments, and that's a big part of our offering. And we actually have very sophisticated invoicing and payment solution. And we've been doing that since day one. For us was more than 10 years ago. I think back then, I'm not even sure we used the term fintech. At some point we started using it, but for us, it's just the core. So it's funny because only about a year and a half ago, we created our fintech team that is focused on more embedded finance, which I would love to elaborate on. But like invoicing and payments were there from day one. It's like the bread and butter of what Honeybook provides with synchronization with the CRM. Now to your question, at some point, our members community have grown and we serve many people. These days, we serve more than 100K members and we are only open in the US and Canada. And you start to have a big community. You talk to them all the time, like many other companies, also including companies, and visited your podcast. We talk a lot to our members. We talk a lot to our non-members to understand why they're not coming. And again, we heard from them the level of anxiety they have about taxes, about managing their cash flow, about savings, and about many other things. Now, the funny thing about it is, historically, or since basically the beginning, we were in quite a unique position. And that unique position is we have visibility for your future income. Because you do your bookings with Honeybook, part of that is if you are, let's say, a brand strategist and you work with many SMBs, you have a bunch of retainer projects. So we know about all the income that will come into your bank account in future months. If you're, again, in the event industry, the event might be a year from now and you might have only gotten a deposit now, but we know your entire payment plan with that client. So we always had visibility for future income, which is quite unique. Now you asked about sequencing, then we realized that if will get you to start and do also your expenses on HoneyBook. So we have the money in already. Now we'll have visibility to your money out. Can really help you with categorization and, you know, for tax purposes and just for cash flow and profitability analysis. Which of my services is the most profitable, not just income, but also profitable? Which of my clients? No, et cetera. So if we'll have that information for you, we can really help you with managing your cash flow. And that, like I said, including managing taxes, savings, et cetera. And so I think about 2 years ago, we heard it enough and we realized that now it's the time to expand our product offering also to embedded financial solutions. Initially, we didn't know if folks will trust us with other parts of their financials, which are not just getting money. Getting money is quite easy. The others are higher there. So what we've done, instead of taking the full kind of like bet on embedded finance, we said, let's see what happens if we offer them loans. So we do offer loans to our members. It's not a huge focus area for us right now. So like our eligibility bar is up there. So not many folks are eligible, but still we have a bunch of thousands of people that already took a lot of loans with us. And it started more as like a thought experiment. Will they trust us? And that went really well. They still use it today. People love it. People go again and again for like their fifth and sixth loan with us. Their feedback is great. With an embedded finance approach, one of the things that we have done is you pay for your loan with your income. So as your income is coming, we take, based on what you decided and what was offered to you, we take a portion and pay back your loan. So it's like completely streamlined, effortless, and really fits your business needs and your business situation. And then we see that the percentage of people that pay their loan on time or even before, ahead of time, is like amazing. So that gave us a lot of appetite. So what we then started to do about a year ago, and we are right now in active beta off, and soon we'll go to global rollout, is allowing you to manage your money where your business is. That's how we call it, at least. And you open your business bank account with us, you have a debit card and a bunch of other features. And then you really have this 360 visibility of everything financial, because you already have, like we said, the income. So now you have everything else. And then we allow you to take action on some of the insights we provide you. So the easiest one was taxes. It's the easiest because people need it so desperately and they don't have a good solution for it right now. So we allow you to very easily estimate your taxes and then start to save for them in a very low anxiety way. And we have a bit less than 1,000 people and we're actively using our bank account and cards, et cetera. And I think more than 50% immediately adopted the tax savings. Like without a lot of in-app promotions, just a beta, we're still early on. We probably haven't figured out how to reduce all the friction, but 50% out of the box. And the beta is like pretty a good representation of the rest of our population. So that was crazy. And then we saw that organically, they also adopt the other saving buckets. And we can say for holiday, for vacation, for equipment, for ads on TikTok, whatever. So they started to use that and we see very impressive numbers. So I think for us, it was more about getting to that size of audience, puts us in a position of, I'll quote my fintech GM, Nir. On our first interview, he told me, hey, the reason why I wanted to join HoneyBook is because you're a community looking for a bank, not a bank looking for a community. That's okay, you're hired. I don't need the rest of the interviews. And we did the rest of the interviews, but he was still hired in my head. But seriously, like once you get a big enough community and you can interleave the financial products embedded into the rest of your products and it makes sense, then you have a big opportunity. I don't think that if we would have created the same banking product as a standalone app and we would have tried to kind of like market it to the independence community in a different name, not HoneyBook and not to our existing members, creating a neobank is very hard. You see companies try to do it all the time. But embedded finance for an existing community, that's the opportunity that we got a lot of appetite for and still do.
And what I'm hearing you say is your embedded fintech journey, if you will, or embedded finance journey, really it started with data, unique data about your clients, their businesses, especially their cash flows. Then that fed into let's trial with some of these products, but let's really focus the trial to reduce risk or to really dial in kind of the use case. And then that has fed like the tax savings, further insights and additional product worry. It strikes me that there's an interesting sort of virtuous circle there. So I'm curious, why did you all create a team specifically for fintech or finance products? And I have some ideas, but I want to ask it explicitly for the listeners. You mentioned trust, obviously the risk that comes with these products. Maybe it's the product experience. What was the logic for Honeybook to say this deserves to be its own team?
Yeah, great. It's not like that every member of that team has a lot of fintech experience, but you do need some fintech experts in that area because it is a specific domain in order to maximize the opportunity, both in terms of the value you bring to your members, your customers, but also in terms of can you create the right unit economics for this to be sustainable? One day in a couple of years, we'll be able to offer it to 100,000 members and not just to 1,000. You need people that really understand the gist of it and can have conversations with the partners and vendors that are in this ecosystem and understand the different types of decisions and strategies you can pick. You do need a bunch of subject matter experts in certain areas for this. Second, even if you look at all the generalists, our product designers on that team don't have an extensive fintech background. But now you want them to start and build this background. You want them to start and really learn about the jobs to be done, about the anxieties, about the mental mindset. When people handle money, as all of your audience knows, it's just a different thing. And you need a different level of empathy when you deal with people's money, with people's savings, with people's expenses, with people's taxes. I think that the best kind of like a metaphor that we heard from one of our members in a research call was whenever I get a letter from the IRS, I leave it unopened on the counter for 3 weeks just to let it chill. And then the second metaphor he gave us was like, whenever I get, the reason why I do it is because I feel like I'm driving on the highway. I have two hands on the steering wheel. I'm driving at the right speed. And a highway patrol is driving by and I'm scared. I'm really scared. And I don't know why. I'm doing everything okay. But there are so many unknown unknowns that I'm just scared. And this is the same feeling that people have with taxes and financials in general. So you need a team that will really deep dive into these intrinsic motivations, feelings, anxieties, etc., and will understand how to build the right product, which will set the right expectations, reduce this anxiety, and will really help them and help them in a way that they will be comfortable taking advantage of.
I love the idea of you need a team to build empathy around some of these products. I think it's easy for folks in the bubble to talk about the risks, the compliance side of it. I just really appreciate you re-anchoring and hey, it's about empathy and the emotion that our customers or our members feel. Maybe one other detailed question on this. You mentioned some of the credit products that you started with. I'm curious for your members in particular, was that more working capital just to help them say smooth income here and there, or was it more growth capital, like help them grow their businesses, open new locations, create franchises and subsidiaries, so on and so forth?
It's mostly the capital for growing, but I would say like, you know, in the micro businesses world, and especially in our domain, we have many kind of like real world businesses. So one of the best examples is a rental company. They rent furniture and things for events. And this guy took a loan, and every time somebody is completing their payout, so they're done with the loan, we send them an email, hey, what was your experience, blah, blah, blah. And what he told us in the response after he completed paying for the loan, like his truck, the size of his truck was the bottleneck of his business.
Oh, wow.
It was like him, his storage, which was huge, and his truck. And he could only rent out things that fit into his truck. So he took, if I remember correctly, like a $30,000 loan, bought a bigger truck, a much bigger truck, and almost doubled his revenue. As simple as that. You took it a bit far with the French. Yeah, we have those as well, but sometimes just about the size of your truck.
That's amazing. So let's pop back up. I want to make sure we cover some of the generative AI pieces as well. You all have released several generative AI-based features. Where are you finding that's actually driving value for your customers or for your members? I think we hear a lot of broad strokes talk about how generative AI will be transformative, and yet it's really the front line where these products add value. So I'm curious, where are you seeing good signal in terms of customers or members really want something from these features?
Yeah. So I think first when we were about to take our first step with AI, because we have so many creatives in our community, we were afraid that they will be a bit anti-AI because I'm a photographer and a graphic designer. maybe I consider DALL-E as my competitor, and maybe because of that, I consider all of AI as my competitor. So we ran a survey within our members community, and the level of openness to AI, but more than the level of already adoption of AI, was staggering. I heard that the person from FreshBooks also talked to you about this in a previous episode, so I won't deep dive into those details, but I would say we saw similar numbers, more or less. Very high openness, but also high level of adoption. We did see that a lot of them said that they don't know how to leverage AI. They're using AI, they're open to using AI, but they don't know. So they're really eager to get more and more value from AI from a platform like ours. So that was the first one. The second thing was, because there are so many buzzwords and buzz products with AI, we said whatever we'll do, we'll measure success by weekly adoption, weekly and monthly adoption. So even if it's out there and it's cool and people are talking about it and the press is covering it, if our members are not using it, it doesn't matter. So like the folks that are working on AI or every AI project that we have, which is externally, not internally, we measure by MAU and WAU of that specific, like overall our AI features, because we really wanted to aim for usability and not for something fancy. And then I would say that we found many low-hanging fruits, meaning areas where our members are experiencing a lot of friction in the real world or in our platform. And AI, even in its current level of capabilities, no, and we also started like more than 6 months ago. So back then it was like before GPT-4, it was more limited. But we anchored on tasks that GPT-3.5 is already doing an amazing job with. So our first feature, for example, was, as we said, our customers are overwhelmed. One of the things they are overwhelmed with is client inquiries. You get a bunch of them, not all of them will convert, but you're also responding back to inquiry very fast is one of the things that they care about the most. So we just help them with that. On our mobile app, whenever you get an inquiry, you get an automated response. We never send the response back to the client because we know that our members want to be in control. But just with a push of a button, you get the response. You can edit it a little bit or send it as it is, whatever you want. And the adoption level was staggering. If I remember correctly, like 30% of the people that do get inquiries on mobile and respond to inquiries on mobile were using that. And most of them were using it as is. Some of them were also measured kind of like the distance between what you sent and what we recommended. It was like very low. And it shortened, the most important thing, it shortened the amount of time that it takes you on average to respond to your inquiries, which is, again, one of the things they really care about. And then we just went to the next opportunity. We have a couple of things that we are really excited about that we're about to launch. And it's amazing. So we start with the use case that we know is painful. And then we say, okay, how can AI help here? And we aim for frequency of use.
Got it. So thank you. If I can double click just quickly, you mentioned ChatGPT 3.5 and 4. I'm curious, do you expect that you'll continue just using some of the, building on top of some of the other platforms? Do you think there's ever a future where you would try to bring some of the core technologies around generative AI and large language models in-house?
Yeah, definitely. So we're definitely optimistic and bullish about using something like Llama or some of the open source models internally. Mm-hmm. For now, I would say we try to move fast. So we haven't made the switch yet. And also we built a lot of layers of using external features and augmenting the prompt and really putting our own proprietary context into the prompt, into the request to the model, into fine-tuning the model, et cetera. The quality that we get from just the vanilla ChatGPT is amazing. So we understand that in the future, we have ideas of what we'll do with our own model. Right now, we still get tons of value from the existing models. Even still, for some of the use cases, we still use GPT 3.5 because it's cheaper and faster. We don't even need GPT 4 for many of the use cases. And we are now focusing much more on like delivering more and more impact and value to our members. And you know, behind the scenes, we also take the kind of like the infrastructure heavy lifts, but we are still more focused on delivering more use cases.
Got it. Yuval, I consider HoneyBook and you and your teams absolutely on the forefront of working with, we talked a lot about embedded fintech now with the generative AI pieces. I want to come back to that idea of culture that we started with. Maybe the question is, what advice do you give to folks on building a team culture these days, especially given these incredible but new opportunities, whether it's the embedded finance features, whether it's the generative AI pieces, there's so much open to product teams these days. How do you think about intentionally building culture as a team like that grows or as you add new teams to focus on these new feature areas?
Totally. So I think if you combine that trend that you mentioned with all the endless opportunities we have, together with the trend that companies are trying to become much more efficient than they were in the past, luckily, Honeybook was always on the small side of companies. And we're less than, I think we're about 220 employees for 100K customers and whatever ARR. I think it's pretty good. We're pretty lean and we are always like that. But the rest of the industry, you know, is actively also working on how to capture new opportunities and how to become more lean. So I think back to your question, as product leaders, I think we have no choice but to raise our hiring bar, and specifically in hiring people that can run independently, have high level of accountability, but also are just very, very curious. And I think I'm willing to trade off, like now, I think things that I learned in hindsight, I'm willing to trade off like fancy resumes for people that have the grit and have the curiosity and the ability to self-learn. And because I understand if I want to place more bets as a company, I can't be micromanaging every single one of them. And I can't be creating the type of structures I had at Meta, like a manager managing three managers, et cetera, where you have a lot of oversight over everybody. No, you just need a bunch of people, different levels of seniority, but for the level of seniority that they are, they need to be extremely independent and extremely curious. And it's much easier to say than done. And it takes some time. It takes 4 or 5 months to hire a good PM from my experience, but it's worth it.
And what I appreciate and want to call out that's implied in there, that idea of as a company, you want to place more bets. And so what I think I hear you saying is with all these new opportunities, there is a notion of you have to place a few more bets, see where there's really value from customers, and then double down on those.
Exactly.
Yuval, this has been wonderful. We went longer than I expected, but thank you so much for taking the time. Before we wrap up, if listeners have questions, if they want to go deeper on any of their topics, is there an easy way to connect with you where they could share those questions?
Yeah, definitely. Yuval Keston on Twitter or LinkedIn. I'm quite responsive. I did spend 10 years on the world's biggest social media platform, so I'm quite responsive on all social media platforms.
Okay. We will absolutely link to your handles in the show notes. Again, Yuval, thank you so much for sharing your time and insight with us today.
Thank you.
Thanks again for tuning into this episode of the SMB Tech Innovators Podcast. We'll make sure to link to any resources that were mentioned in today's show in the show notes. Please also feel free to leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcast or to connect with the Gusto Embedded team via LinkedIn. In particular, we'd love to hear any future guests you'd like us to have on the show. Thanks again for listening and keep a lookout for the next episode.